Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, we're supposed to have Noel Featherstein. He was supposed to come in to talk about gun rights and also regarding the Stand Your Ground law. We're still trying to reach him, still going to his voicemail. But we will probably will do is we can't reach him in the next 5 minutes. We're going to reschedule this episode to sometime next month. But in the meantime, let's take a break real quick and listen to some music. I'm going to play Joe Sample's Soul Shadow. And we're going to go ahead and just tune out to that and take a listen to it. It's from his new album. Well, everybody, welcome to you again to the Core Business Show. Noel, thank you for joining the show. I guess what we're going to talk about today for the next 15 minutes, if you don't mind, if you can tell us about the Stand Your Ground law, what is it about, and why did Florida decide to actually have this law in their books?
Well, basically, what the standard ground law has done is it's basically has extended the castle doctrine from outside of our citizen's home out into the streets of their place where they're supposed to or have a legal right to be. Now, what I mean by that is most states, or, well, at one time, many states, in Florida amongst them, we had what we would call, you know, our self-defense laws, and, you know, it's reasonable, and we would, society, I think, approves of the fact that everybody has the right to defend themselves and shouldn't be held, you know, criminally liable or accountable if they're acting in self-defense. But before you could utilize self-defense, you had to exhaust all of your avenues of retreat, or it had to be apparent to you that if you were to use, excuse me, deadly force in self-defense, obviously, if somebody's trying to punch and you try to punch them back or swat them away, you don't have to look and make sure you can get away. But if you're going to use deadly force, obviously, society, or at least many states at one time, put a higher standard. Before you use that deadly force in defense of yourself, you got to make sure that reduce it down to that being the only option. Now, I mentioned the castle doctrine, and what that is, and kind of, I think we can get an idea of what it means from its very name, is if someone's in their home and somebody feels threatened or they're being attacked or they have uninvited guests and they have to, or they feel it's necessary for them to use a deadly force to protect themselves. So, example, we have a would-be home invader or burglar, and they're armed with a firearm or some other type of weapon, instead of having to run out the back door, the castle doctrine would permit them to use deadly force to protect their home. And they didn't have to make sure that they exhausted all possible avenues of retreat before using deadly force. Many states, to my knowledge, not all of them, have the castle doctrine. You're allowed to use deadly force in defense of your home if you feel threatened. No, this does not mean you can stand out in front of your house and start shooting people until you feel threatened. We're talking if they are invading. If the sanctity of your home has been infringed upon, so our society and laws throughout most of the states in the U.S., but recognize that you have a right to protect that, and you use deadly force in protecting that right. And what Stand Your Ground did, which Florida adopted in 2005 and several other states, I don't know the exact number, but many others are soon have put a form of it on their books, adopted their own version, or in the process of considering, is if someone is where they legally have a right to be, and if they feel threatened, they no longer have to make sure they exhaust all avenues of retreat prior to using deadly force. So, if I'm in my car and a carjacker approaches me, well, before I could use deadly force, I'd have to make sure that I couldn't, you know, well, if I push the gas pedal, I can get away, or if I back up here, or I turn here. That used to be the case in Florida prior to 2005, prior to Stand Your Ground. Now, that person who is protecting themselves, when they're being threatened with deadly force, they no longer have to make sure that they've exhausted all their avenues of escape, and they can meet deadly force with deadly force. Now, that doesn't mean someone can come up and slap you, and you decide, hey, I'm feeling very threatened, and you pull out your gun and shoot them. You know, so a slap is clearly not deadly force.
Okay.
But in the legal world, well, I'm a 90-pound, 63-year-old woman, and that man who slapped me is 250 pounds and 6'7". So, and you have that odd scenario, now you have a case that she stand her ground.
Okay, which really makes sense. When it applies to, if you have any tests for your property, if they're in your home, then is the law saying that, yes, you can use deadly force if you're protecting your property, and they, and now in your space, does that apply to use deadly force, because you just don't know what options you really have there?
Now, let's be careful, because when we say property, I could be talking about my car.
Okay.
And me personally, I don't think anyone should ever use deadly force for the sake of protecting property. Oddly enough, the law doesn't always, sometimes the law thinks, hey, they're allowed to use deadly force to protect that property. Property, and when we're talking about real estate property, that's a little bit different from cars, possession, other things we may have. But I think what it, with respect to the castle doctrine, they're referring to your residence, your home.
Okay.
And the law and society is prepared to recognize, you know, a certain sanctity, a certain, you know, that when people go to their house, that's their castle, hence the name, the castle doctrine. I think the law kind of recognizes the sanctity of the home, and most states do, and that's why we had the castle doctrine. The castle doctrine, you know, obviously, you hear the name, castle doctrine. This obviously comes from the old English common law, which many of our laws throughout America, you know, they come from the English common law, from the way they developed their laws, and it obviously comes from that era, and this castle doctrine obviously was originated in England.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But your home, the castle, is a little different, but when your cart, someone have a threatening or if they have a gun to you and they want your car, I mean, you're just going to give them the car. It's not used to fighting for the car. You might not have enough time to react if someone is holding a gun to your head. Just give it to them. With deadly force, if they did use deadly force and it's justified, if they just threaten you with something, you know, that's not deadly force, that's not deadly force.
Well, I think the funny thing about the law is it really doesn't operate on absolutes, and I would say we more have guidance.
Okay.
For example, the standard ground law that's gotten the most notoriety here and brought the standard ground case that's gotten, you know, notoriety and put forward in the national spotlight and brought that law in the spotlight is obviously the Trayvon Martin case. In that case, someone was unarmed and someone is shot dead. I have two standard ground cases pending now. And I have completed one of the standard ground motions. We did our hearing, and I'm getting ready to do another in another case. In both of my cases, and this is really kind of funny if you think about it, well, maybe it's not funny, but tragic if you think about it. In both of my cases where my clients and we asserted the standard ground defense, they displayed a weapon.
Okay.
They didn't pull the trigger. No one got shot. No one got hurt. But they displayed a weapon. They both got arrested. And in the Trayvon Martin case, someone was actually shot, and initially, no one got arrested. So it's kind of, to me, you know, it's ironic. It's odd. In my case, no one's even shot, and they're arrested. We're asserting the defense, and I think we got clear grounds on it. So with that, as I'm pointing out, the law doesn't always operate in absolutes, and there are cases where I think, you know, you're right. If someone can escape and they want to make that personal choice to do that, then obviously that might be a better way to go. But in Florida, in America, have a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms.
Mm-hmm.
And in Florida, we don't have to exercise a duty to retreat, which was in most states and most jurisdictions prior to the enactment of the Stand Your Ground law. So in today's world, when things happen, for example, I'm a gun owner, and the last thing I relish is the idea of possibly having to pull out that gun in defense of myself, because I think there's a good chance, one, my hand's probably not going to be steady. It's nothing I do every day. I'm not a combat veteran. I'm not recently coming back from a situation where I'm used to these situations, used to these conditions of having to use my firearm in defense of myself. If I ever find myself in that situation, quite candidly, honestly, you know, I might be using the bathroom in my pants as that's going on. With that being said, if I do find myself in a situation where I do feel threatened, if I can escape the situation, me personally, I'm probably going to do that. Or I might display my firearm. Probably going to do that too. But whatever happens, when I use the bathroom in my pants, I'm going to feel a lot more secure that I have a firearm to defend myself than if I use the bathroom in my pants and I don't have a firearm to defend myself. Now, I hate to sound so crude, but I don't know how other way to put it. It's contrary to what Senator Lautenberg and some other pro-gun control advocates and proponents have said. I don't think most gun owners relish the idea of finding themselves in a self-defensive situation where they have to use their gun. I don't define my manhood by my exercise of my Second Amendment right. I just don't do that. But I am glad and thankful that I had it because I wasn't always a gun owner. I didn't become a gun owner until I was a victim of a crime. Somebody tried to break into my residence. Yeah, of course it's going to cause somebody, I think it would cause most people distress. And they killed my dog. And, wow. My dog was really, I was really close to that dog. I didn't have a girlfriend or a wife at the time. I had my dog. So somebody took something away from me that was very meaningful. And after that, that's when I personally started getting involved in firearms. Again, hopefully I never find myself in a situation where I'm a victim of crime. Hope it never happens.
Absolutely.
I have no idea if no one that happened. But I like the idea that I do have a right to protect myself, and I'm gonna, I view my firearm as insurance protection. Hey, it doesn't mean I'm gonna, be able to successfully save myself or protect myself, but it just gives me a fighting chance that I otherwise would not have. And if I find myself in a situation where I can either protect myself because I'm outside of my home, because if somebody's entering my home and that shouldn't be entering, I'm probably going to be blasting and not running.
Absolutely.
But if I find myself out in the public, I don't know. If I can escape at that moment in time, say, hey, I'm just going to go. It's not worth it. If somebody puts a gun to my head and a hand on my wallet and they start running, as much as I'd want to whip out my gun and shoot them in the back, I'm probably going to think, let that go. Money's replaceable. They can get that guy later. But at least I like the idea if I'm in a situation where – I'm not sure if I can leave or not, and I'm just going to protect myself because I feel that afraid. I'm at least thankful that I'm now in a state such as Florida and many others that have adopted Stand Your Ground where I don't have to, I know I did nothing. Now I have to go and prove that, hey, it was my only option, and I'm being drugged before a court. And that's, being dragged through the court system, whether it's as a felony, a misdemeanor, or even if it's just a civil matter, it's not something that most people, aside from myself as attorney and other colleagues, it's not things that most people do every day, and it generally is traumatic. Whether you got arrested for a misdemeanor or obviously a felony is going to be very traumatic, but even civil, all of these, if you're not doing, like I just talked about, I don't use firearms in defense of myself every day. So, of course, if I'm brought in that situation, I'm sure the people that are in those situations are under stress, but they're under greater stress than they're like me. They're not doing that every day. And the same thing is going to happen to a person who just thought, hey, look, I was just trying to defend myself. Now I got to prove to these people that was my only option. That is what I think the whole purpose of the Stand Your Ground law was, to kind of assist people who were lawfully defending themselves. Now, I know, and I agree with the gun control addicts, advocates, that our world would be a much better place if guns didn't exist, if no one had guns. They're correct. But that's not the world we live in. And I feel fortunate that I'm even in a country such as America, which permits me to arm myself. And we look at Mexico, their citizens aren't allowed to have firearms, and I guess the drug cartels just, that law doesn't apply to them, but they just don't care.
Yeah, they probably
don't
care. One question real quick. When you're talking about the two cases that you had, you said they both were taken to jail because both had firearms? Okay.
One wasn't even on the scene. One was not even on the scene. The police arrest them later. You know, one situation, my client, you know, he got in an altercation with somebody over a gas pump. And, you know, this guy took his pump, or he took a pump. They were fighting over the pump. So he went to a different pump, and this person kept going, arguing with him. In fact, this person was 6'7", 350 pounds. Not lying. I got it on depositional testimony. Deposition mean I, you know, I got to question him under oath.
Sure.
Apparently my client had a red bag in which he had his weapon. He was a concealed weapons permit holder. The guy keeps coming up to him. He places his bag on the dashboard of his truck. The guy starts, you know, continuing the conversation. And, hey, look, my client exchanged words, too. He was trying to back to a pump. This guy was pulling forward, so he relented, thinking this guy was going to leave. The guy just took and occupied, so he goes to the other side. This person keeps confronting him, and my client, you know, just tells the guy several times to get away, get away, get away. And then the guy says, oh, you got a gun. My client, get away, get away. Didn't even pull out his gun. Didn't even point it at him. But, you know, he could see that he had a firearm. He had it in a red bag, little red bag. And the zipper was open. So the guy backs off. You know, my client leaves. Well, then this guy calls the cops.
Okay, and of course, what did they arrest him on?
Unlawful display or exhibition of a firearm.
Okay.
Originally, they arrested him for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, which
wow.
is a felony.
It is.
But as the facts came out, you know, this person alleged that my client was waving a firearm in broad daylight and busy gas station right next to a high school at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, it's a well-traveled area, which my client obviously did not do and asserted that he didn't do, and they originally charged him with aggravated assault. But I think part of the reason the state dropped it just seemed kind of odd that there were no 911 calls. There were no 911. Well, there actually was one 911 call. That was when a parent called in 911 said he heard something about a gun, and his daughter attended the local high school. And they said no, and they took care of it. That, you know, there was an incident at the, you know, gas station was adjacent, but still, there was no one calling 911 saying, I see a man with a firearm waving around. I think that's something most people would notice, because it's nothing you see every day, and I think it's something that we'll report.
We have about 3 more minutes real quick. Couple things real quick. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you got to have a license to carry a firearm, correct, in Florida?
No, you only have to have a license to carry a firearm concealed.
Okay.
And that just basically means hidden about your person. Anybody and everybody, well, you can't carry a firearm open in public. You know, you have to have it in your car securely in case.
Unless
you can do whatever you want with it in your house. You can do whatever you want with your business. I have a concealed weapons permit. Rarely should say this on air, but rarely carry it on me. Usually just keep it in the car. The whole reason I got that is so if I get stopped by a police officer, here's my license, here's my firearm, there's no question, you know.
Okay.
Hey, you can have the firearm that way.
Well, any last words you'd like to have in regards to your stand your ground?
Any last thoughts I have?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good law. I think it's a good law, you know, and I also think the police don't always get it right. I think they do get it right 99% of the time. I know that as a criminal attorney, defense attorney, because a lot of my clients will plead out and negotiate deals because they know that, you know, cops got them dead to rights. But they don't always get it right. And I think it's a good law that, you know, if Stand Your Ground is repealed, if people are found that they shouldn't use it, what this will tell the would-be criminal, the would-be carjacker, is the law-abiding citizen who they're about to rob, assault, they might be hampered in withdrawing their firearm because, you know, Stand Your Ground is no longer affected. They can make a claim of, hey, this guy shot me. I mean, I was pointing my gun at him, but I wasn't going to pull the trigger. And then he actually shot me, and now I'm crippled, and I'd like to sue him. So, again, yes, I think Stand Your Ground is a very good law. We should keep it in place. and it'll just have to run the judicial course from time to time, as it is now in the Trayvon Martin case.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you giving us all this information. Noel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Have a great day.
Again, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This has been a production of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. You can download this episode on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. Everybody have a great day. Thank you, Noel.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.